Good afternoon, and thank you for standing by. For the duration of today's conference, all participants' lines are on a listen-only mode. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. It is my pleasure to introduce Ms. Catherine Bates with Broadband USA. Thank you, ma'am. You may begin.
Thank you, Holly. Thank everybody for joining us today for Broadband USA's Practical Broadband Conversations, a monthly webinar series on broadband topics of interest to policymakers, decision-makers, practitioners, and consumers. These conversations are scheduled the third Wednesday of each month, but please note, we're not going to have one in August. This afternoon's topic is how broadband is transforming agriculture. I'm Catherine Bates with Broadband USA, and I will moderate today's presentations by three agriculture and technology experts representing the state of Tennessee, Northern California, and an agricultural equipment manufacturer. Questions from the audience will be taken after all of the presentations are complete. Please type your questions in the GoToWebinar Q&A on the right side of your screen. We do not open the phone line for questions, and you are in mute mode the entire time. This presentation, along with a transcript and audio, will be posted on the Broadband USA website within 7 days. Please consult the website or contact us if you would like a copy of it, and we can send it to you. So let's get started today. As I mentioned, our presenters are listed on the first screen, but I'm going to introduce first is Kevin Hensley, the Associate Director in the Public Policy Division at the Tennessee Farm Bureau Federation. Kevin's division at Farm Bureau voices the concerns of agriculture to lawmakers at the state and national level and serves as an advocate for Tennessee agriculture. The Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in Tennessee and in the United States. Kevin graduated from the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, with a degree in agriculture economics and received a minor in political science. So, Kevin, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thank you, Catherine, and I'll go ahead and just jump on into my presentation. The state of Tennessee completed a study that showed that 13% of the state lacked connectivity to broadband internet, which was defined for the purposes of the study as 25 megabytes per second download and 3 megabytes per second upload. In December of 2014, 98% of all Tennesseans enroll in urban areas in census blocks where at least one provider reported offering wireline or fixed wireless service with a capacity of 25.3 compared to only 66% of those in rural areas, which means that only 2% of the state's urban citizens lacked access, whereas 34% of rural residents are without coverage. This is mostly due to low population density and challenging geography. So what does this internet mean to rural areas? While there are many farm uses for internet, which I will get to some of those later, farmers and other rural people want access to internet for improved quality of life. I am personally lucky enough to live in an area where there is great internet, and it would be hard to imagine not having this type of service. Just like people that live in more urban areas, people in rural areas want access to social media, streaming services, and everything else that the internet provides. This is just like electricity generations ago. When rural people received electricity, not only was it used to run the milk parlor, but it was also used to run the home. Access to internet is becoming a necessity, not just a luxury. Next slide, please. We at the Farm Bureau have heard countless stories for years about how students have had to drive into town to complete a homework assignment. More schools are requiring homework assignments to be completed online. And then if not, often this technology is not even used in rural areas because the students and parents don't have that access to it. And when they are required to use it in rural areas, they have to go somewhere to do it. For people with readily accessible internet, it's kind of hard to imagine having to go to the local McDonald's to complete homework. But this happens a lot in rural areas. And this is just for middle and high school students. Today, opportunity abounds for students to continue their education online, and this is even more this will be even more prevalent in the future. Farmers and other rural people want this opportunity. Next slide, please. Even though Farm Bureau is a farm advocacy group, we are still concerned about the overall state of the rural economy. Farmers need a thriving economy in rural areas. This again gets back to the idea of improved quality of life. As we are all aware, most of today's businesses and industry need access to internet. With limited availability to internet, it is difficult to encourage industry to expand into rural areas. This is important to farmers for many reasons, but as this slide says, 52% of America's farms' principal operator has a primary occupation off the farm, according to the 2016 USDA NAS Survey of Agriculture. And for most other farms, there some family member has an off-the-farm job in search of income and benefits. Next slide, please. So how does internet actually impact today's farmers? I've listed several items on this slide, but the possibilities are really endless. It is truly amazing how much data we can collect from farms and the information that can be learned from that. We have seen a huge uptick in interest in for people that are interested in where their food comes from, and the internet allows farmers to connect these consumers. The internet can lower costs for farmers. Just like any other consumer can compare prices online, farmers do the same thing on their farms. Time is money, and even more so with farmers. Farmers can use the internet to save time and increase efficiency. The internet also provides farmers with current news about market trends, and in today's fast-paced economy, that is very important. Just last week, for instance, the price of soybeans dropped about 50 cents in one day, and a farmer had much to lose in that situation if they were in the market. Next slide, please. Next, I would like to talk about two specific success stories in Tennessee about farmers who have used broadband internet. First off, the Sweetwater Valley Farm in Philadelphia, Tennessee, who uses the internet in multiple ways. They are a 1,300-cow dairy and milk three times a day in two different locations. The farmer, John Harrison, can monitor activities with cameras that he has set up in both parlors through an app on his smartphone. They also collect much data about how much each individual cow on the farm produces. This information is collected and sent to a server at the farm office. They have Wi-Fi on many parts of the farm, so they can access this information through their phones. They use about 10% of their milk to go into a farmstead cheddar cheese. The rest of the milk goes down to a fluid milk processor down the road. They sell their cheese at their farm store, in regional supermarkets, and online. Their website and social media use is vital to their operation. Much of their overall cheese sales comes from online during Christmas time when they ship all across the United States. They use Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as a platform to promote the farm. Recently, they have produced several videos that explain how a modern dairy farm actually works and posted these videos to Facebook and Instagram. Another example of how they are utilizing social media is that they are hosting a solar eclipse viewing party in August and are solely promoting that event through social media. Also, at their farm store, they use the internet to run their credit card purchases and have the capability of doing pop-up stores across the region thanks to this technology. Next slide, please. Next is Weaver Farms, who farm in Coffee and Franklin counties in southeastern Middle Tennessee. They are a diverse row crop farm and also produce livestock and produce. They're literally at the end of the line for internet access, as their neighbors do not have the same internet service that they do. While their equipment does not collect data on their farm about their row crops, they do use the internet for direct-to-consumer sales. They sell fresh beef, pork, and produce direct to consumers or at a farmer's market. Jamie Weaver, who is the son in this father-son operation, told me that they could not do what they do without their website. The consumer wants to do research on the farm before buying from them. They also use social media to advertise and promote their products. Other than that, Jamie told me that they could use the internet every day on their farm, from updating social media, watching a YouTube video about how to repair equipment, checking the weather, news, and the market. This allows for quick decision-making on the farm, and they also use the internet to purchase parts and equipment on a regular basis. But for every success story with farmers and the internet, there are multiple untold stories of limited opportunities. So as a state, the governor and the General Assembly took on this challenge of getting internet to rural areas. Like I said at the beginning, over a third of Tennessee's rural residents do not have access to broadband internet. On the next slide, you'll see a link from Governor Bill to a YouTube video that is presented by Governor Bill Haslam on why passing the Broadband Accessibility Act was so important to Tennesseans. He mentions that as Tennesseans, we want a vibrant rural economy, and we know that the internet is needed to have that in the future. We couldn't quite get the video to work, so I want to encourage you to check out the link at the end and go back to it and watch the video, or you can go to YouTube and search the name of the video, which is Gov Bill Haslam Broadband Accessibility Act. Next slide, please. But again, go back and watch that video, but I'll give a quick synopsis about how what the Broadband Accessibility Act did. Farm Bureau heavily supported this bill, which is a part of the governor's legislative initiatives, and was overwhelmingly supported by the General Assembly. The bill passed unanimously in our Senate by 93-4 margin in the House. This bill came after years of study by the Tennessee Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Relations and our Department of Economic and Community Development, along with some other attempted legislation that happened in the past. The bill mainly did three things. First, the bill allows rural electric cooperatives to provide broadband internet and television service. Electric co-ops are uniquely positioned to help solve the internet problems in rural areas, but because of complex and longstanding state regulatory restrictions, the co-ops were previously prevented from providing broadband. Second, the bill established a small grant program for local libraries to apply for that aims to teach internet literacy. It doesn't do much good to have internet available to people if they don't adopt it because of a lack of knowledge. And third, the bill established in the budget over the next 3 years $45 million in a mix of state grants and tax credits to help internet providers go into the underserved areas in the state. In the big picture, we kind of realize that this is a small amount and the true cost of taking internet to rural areas, but we believe it's a healthy start, and it may tip some providers over the edge into going into these areas. This bill is not a fix-all, and we won't see broadband internet in all of rural Tennessee tomorrow, but we believe it is a step in the right direction. And with that, I'll wrap up, and I'll be happy to take questions at the end.
Thank you, Kevin. You gave us a good overview of why broadband is important, especially in supporting farmers in Tennessee. As a reminder to participants, any questions you have, please type in the your questions in the GoToWebinar screen on the right of your screen that's up there. And also, we're going to post the presentation online along with a transcript and recording within 7 days. It will have that link to the YouTube video about Governor Haslam, because he does a great job of laying out why it's so important in a very short amount of time. So that's a good video. Thanks, Kevin. We're now going to talk about an innovative pilot project across the country in California. So I'd like to introduce Trish Kelly, Managing Director at Valley Vision, a regional civic leadership organization serving California's Capital Region and Northern California. Trish manages Valley Vision's portfolios in broadband, food and agriculture, and economic and workforce development. Valley Vision leads the region's Connected Capital Broadband Consortium, part of a statewide network of consortia funded by the California PUC to close the digital divide and drive deployment of innovative technologies. Valley Vision also leads many other agriculture and technology projects in the region, while Trish herself is involved in many organizations supporting this work throughout California. Trish graduated from Georgetown University and has a degree from the University of Pennsylvania. And I will hand it over to Trish now.
Thank you so much, Catherine. And we're very happy to be here today, and we'd like to thank you and NTIA for this opportunity. And as you can see on our opening slide, we have many partners working with us on this project, and we'll describe their roles as we go along. I'd like to just mention that all of the issues that Kevin described are the conditions and circumstances and challenges and opportunities that we face. So it's certainly, I think, a national issue that we're all working on together. Next slide, please. So as a quick overview, Catherine mentioned our broadband consortium, which we manage. There's a statewide network of about 14 consortia. So the role of the consortia are to help collaborate with local partners, and we really try to identify the biggest areas of gap and the priority infrastructure projects, work on identifying funding sources, including that which is available through the state California Advanced Services Fund, which supports the consortia, We advocate for the resources and policy changes we need. There's a lot of education to really help people understand what the circumstances are. A lot of people think because we're in California, we're the state capital here, and we're close to Silicon Valley, that everybody should be all connected, and that is not the case. So we're looking at the many ways that broadband can improve the economy, public safety, and quality of life, and so especially this is a huge issue for us in our rural communities. Next slide, please. So there is a documented urban and rural divide across the country. You heard in Tennessee, and then we have this in California as well as our own region. In California, only 43% of the state's rural population have the same internet access as our urban areas, and most of this population resides in the Great Central Valley, which stretches in our state from Bakersfield in the south to Reading in the north. This is a huge global economic engine in terms of our food and ag industry as well as other industries, and we just simply do not have the infrastructure to compete as a level playing field. In our region in Sacramento, which is basically a six-county region with a broader food shed, we have a food and ag cluster that generates more than $7 billion in direct economic impact, so it's a very important economic sector for us. Our Council of Governments, SACOG, has been doing a lot of research over the last several years through an innovative planning project called Rural Urban Connection Strategy that really looks at the interdependence of our urban and rural areas and has done a lot of research to document how we can build more sustainable food systems, and looking at our infrastructure needs, including transportation and broadband. We are the home of UC Davis, which is one of the preeminent agricultural universities in the world. We're generating ag technologies, but we can't use a lot of these technologies unless we have access to broadband as an enabling platform. And nowhere has the need for this technology come home more for us than in the, we're just coming out of a five-year drought. Now we had the opposite in the last year. We had huge storms and floods. We had a almost catastrophic flood with the challenges with our Oroville Dam. So the way that broadband is needed in rural areas is both for food and ag, but also hugely for public safety and trying to get our fairgrounds connected because they're public staging areas for emergency services. We're also particularly proud that our Central Valley has a federal designation from the Economic Development Administration as one of 24 manufacturing regions nationally, and there's only one in four, we're one of the four for food and ag. So poor broadband has been identified as a major infrastructure challenge for us to address to really help accelerate the growth of manufacturing in our region. So here we are, we're the sixth largest economy in the world. Capital Region has over 2 million residents, and we still have this big divide. Next slide, please. So going down to a more of a local level, through our consortium work over the last several years, one of our counties, Yolo County, is food and ag is their primary economic driver, and they conducted a broadband strategic plan with all of their jurisdictions and community stakeholders, and they documented gaps in both urban and rural areas. And a lot of what they did was try to really understand the differences between reported levels of service and actual levels of service. So we use a tool, it's an app called CalSpeed, which is developed by the PUC that helps people document real-time reporting on what their service is. And so what we have finding out is that more than 90,000 people in our region are underserved or unserved. And if you look at our primary infrastructure grades just for Yolo County, based on analysis of CPUC data as reported from our providers, we have grades that range from C minus to F plus. And part of the criteria is not just speed, it's the level of competition. So we may have good speed in some areas, but we don't have enough competition, and there are issues with pricing and reliability and service quality. So you will note also, too, that this is a standard of only 6 down and 1.5 up. So our state standard is far below the federal standard. So, again, if we're going to compete, we need to have really great broadband. As you can see on the next slide, we took the data from our analysis and just overlaid them on our counties and when you go to a more localized level, you'll be able to see in your own community or your census-designated place what the broadband is. The C represents the city of Sacramento, the urban metro area. We have several larger suburban communities, and we have a lot of small rural towns spread throughout our region. We have a very large region. Over 80% of it is in open space and ag, and or forest up in the foothills and toward Lake Tahoe, which you see to the right-hand side of your screen. To the left-hand side of your screen is the Bay Area, so we're only 90 miles from the Bay Area. And again, I submit that these grades are not what they should be for the capital region. So, next slide, please. So, in response to some of our challenges, we've been very fortunate to partner with the California Emerging Technology Fund. This foundation was created out of a merger of the telecoms about 10 years ago, and its mission is to address the digital divide, but also, as with the consortia, to promote the adoption of very innovative projects looking across many different kind of areas of application. And so she has funded Valley Vision and Fresno State to do an ag tech pilot in two of our leading agricultural counties. And Fresno State is our partner who manages the San Joaquin Valley Broadband Consortium. So we each received a grant of $75,000, and we're working closely together to implement the project. We're testing the same three crops, grapes, almonds, and tomatoes, but we are using different technologies and different ways of interfacing with our growers and technology providers. We were also fortunate through our state broadband coordinator from USDA, Robert C., he connected us with the Internet Society, the San Francisco Bay Area chapter, and they have been generous to fund Chico State University, which is just north of our region, with a $20,000 grant to do mobile broadband testing in Yolo County. So we also have an advisory board, including UC, Ag and Natural Resources, USDA, and public and private partners. So we have a lot of intellectual heft that's trying to help us sort through this project. Next page, please. So our pilot has several goals. Overall, our purpose is that we want to document the need for and the benefits of reliable, cost-effective broadband access in rural areas for agriculture, but also, as Kevin mentioned, our rural economic vitality. So we want to document how broadband increases on-farm productivity, decreases energy and water use, which is really incredibly vital for us, and helps reduce chemical inputs to improve soil health and other kind of aspects. And also there's a food safety component that's more and more important. And what we're doing is we're looking at we're trying to verify the claimed provider performance with actual so that we can identify where we need to fill our gaps. And we want to test the performance of people, farmers who are using technology versus those who aren't, to see what the benefits are. And then our final opportunity really here is to introduce these new emerging ag tech capabilities to our growers who are innovators in and of themselves. Next page, please. So our ag tech pilot has several project activities, and Valley Vision's role is to conduct research on the state of where the ag technology trends are. We partner with, support, and leverage new partners, and we help connect technology providers with growers. So we kind of have a facilitative role as well as an overall project management role and reporting role. So the first phase was a literature review on ag technology trends and impacts of technology in the field. And part of this aspect on research is the first ever mobile broadband testing on broadband speeds related to 150 farms in the county, and that's what the Chico State University research is working on, and that's kind of an ongoing process through our year-long project. Phase two is a survey of growers to get more qualitative input on the availability that they have on broadband on and off the farm. And we worked with the Yolo County Ag Commissioner on this project, who included the survey questions in the annual letter that they do to the farmers requesting their data for the annual crop report. The third phase is actually out in the field. Yolo County, we're working with three farmers and two technologies. And in Fresno, there's three farmers but one technology. So here we've been partnering with our AgStart incubator to test cutting-edge technologies and differences. And I want to note that this incubator came out of a grant that we received, UC Davis and our Technology Alliance, several years ago from EDA to do a Sustainable Ag Tech Innovation Center. So we're really proud that this is resulting in the next stage of building innovation infrastructure in our region. So our sensors, where we're using sensor technology, were installed in the spring of this year. We had a late spring because of the floods and all the water. And we're doing research and field testing from the sensors and other technologies, which will be analyzed in the fall, post-harvest, and presented in the fall of 2017. So just as a quick recap on kind of major research findings that we are using to, as a policy brief to inform state and local policymakers, is how important broadband is for ag production and operations, and the availability really has serious implications for our competitiveness. Deployment research shows that farmers are able to use 20 to 30% less water using ag technologies, but they also have increased crop productivity. And in fact, we found talking to many of our growers that they actually adopted these technologies for productivity improvement and then found the benefits when they went through lean water years that it actually helped them continue to farm as efficiently as they could. Precision ag data is evolving into big data, huge growth, huge analytics, so this is a new field of practice and we want to make sure our ag sector is ready. The precision ag market is projected to reach over almost $8 billion globally by 2020, and in our region and in our state, we want to make sure we have part of that market because we are innovating on these technologies from UC Davis and others. So some of our emerging issues are that we have a chronic labor shortage, and this is especially critical with aging of farmers and immigration issues. Food safety is a huge issue. So our young farmers, as well as our older farmers, really need these ag technologies to help them better manage operations. And our farmers are part of our leadership that is trying to carry that message forward. Next slide, please. This reports on the results of our grower survey. The survey went out to about 800 growers, and we had about 100 responses, which is a very good rate of return. And 27% of the farmers report that they have no coverage at all, and in some cases this is cell phone coverage as well as internet access. And 73% of the farms report some coverage. Some of this is from mobile hotspots. So what happens is farmers will collect the data in the field and upload it from a mobile hotspot, or like Kevin reported, people have to go into town to a Starbucks and download their data, upload their data, conduct their business. They have to report to the state on things like pesticide use. So we promote that it's not just ag in the field or broadband in the field, that we need this in our communities and also in our homes so kids can do homework and our rural communities can thrive. Next slide, please. This is the Ag Tech field study. This is the process that we're in now, and we required that our technology providers meet three performance criteria, that their technology would lower resource input, increase crop or yield productivity, and increase access to markets to boost the bottom line. And this includes export markets or regional markets. We're really working hard to build access to our regional food systems. That's a huge issue for us as America's farm-to-fork capital. But also, it's important for our growers because agritourism is very important in our region, so this is an important way to reach markets and customers. Valley Vision coordinated with our AgStart incubator to connect ag technology companies with growers, so the growers actually had a chance to see a demonstration. Most of them were out in the field, and they could talk to the technology providers about things that how the technology would work, and our participating farmers have been paid $1,000 each to beta test the technologies and work with the companies. So this is the next slide, shows the technologies that we're using. And at first when we started, we thought everything would be sensors or something like that in the field. There's a lot of soil sensors, but there's some new research on leaf sensor technology and other approaches. But one of our companies, Wexus, that's working with our tomato grower, is actually focusing on the pump, irrigation pump efficiency and maintenance needs. and it plugs into our local utility. So Polaris, this monitors and supports the hardware device installation, and then WEXIS runs the consumer interface. So what it does is it tracks energy and water use and provides back to the customer so they can reduce their costs by kind of when they load and when they water. And in California, a great deal of energy is used to transport water. So if you reduce energy water use, you also reduce energy use. And we had one reported farmer from another project that saved $40,000 a year on this approach by just changing the timing of when he watered and used the and maintained pumps. So our other technology providers are using aerial technologies to deliver imagery, and we're doing that on grapes and almonds. And then in Fresno County, they're using automated irrigation systems through an on-farm sensor network. So when the project finishes, we'll be able to look across at the same crops and see how different technologies perform. Next slide, please. And then we're doing on-site testing in the field through Chico State using the CalSpeed application. They're actually going out and testing in 150 farm areas. The first phase was on roads, so the reporting showed a little bit better access, but the next phase is to actually be on farm, and that's going to really document the need for where we need to target infrastructure priorities and broadband adoption infrastructure. Next slide, please, shows kind of that we found, Chico State found that there were three areas in the county with limited broadband and three with higher. So that's where they're going to go deeper to measure the variability. That data will be compared to the performance needs that the growers have, and there'll be information on spreadsheets and a GIS geo database. And this can be replicated in other areas. The next slide just shows where our testing sites are. So you can see they're really spread throughout the valley, through the county. The left-hand part of the upper left-hand, that's an area called Capay Valley. There are a lot of organic growers. And to the lower right-hand side is the Delta. That's an area that doesn't have very good access, and yet it's 10, 15 minutes from the Capitol. So next page, please. This is our conclusion. Just to say is that we are really excited about this project. It's unique, I think, and it's given us a great opportunity to really highlight how important our rural economy is and how important it intersects with our urban. And it's giving us a lot of tools and information to document good solutions and strategies and help our growers compete and get the tools they need. We have gotten a lot of new partnerships from this project. Our Chamber of Commerce carries this issue as a regional leadership priority on our federal CAP visits and through our Food and Ag Committee, so we're very grateful for that support. And then, as I mentioned, some of our other partners, UC Ag and Natural Resources, UC Davis, USDA, the State Broadband Council, et cetera. So when we get the final mapping and results, we'll be preparing materials for dissemination and working with the state and others to really help advance our issues. And again, we'd like to thank our partner, the California Emerging Technology Fund, and ISOC for their support. And thank you.
Thank you, Trish. That's an amazing project you have going on there and going to produce a lot of data. So I appreciate you sharing that with us. I just want to give a couple of reminders. The questions will be taken following the next presentation. If you have any, please type them into the GoToWebinar Q&A box. We're also skipping the webinar series in August. It's a big vacation time in Washington, D.C., so we decided to skip it. So the next practical broadband conversations will be Wednesday, September 20th, and the topic will be on digital training and workforce development. And lastly, today's presentation transcript and recording will be available on the Broadband USA website within the next week. Trish mentioned the importance of precision agriculture, and our last speaker, Ben Craker, will give an overview of the many technological facets of farm equipment. Ben is the product manager, Global Fuse, Data Partners and Standards at the AGCO Corporation. AGCO is a global leader in the design, manufacture, and distribution of agriculture solutions and supports more productive farming through its full line of equipment and related services. AGCO, AGCO products are sold through five core brands, Challenger, Fendt, GSI, Massey Ferguson, and Valtra, all of which are supported by Fuse Precision Technology and Farm Optimization Services. They are distributed globally through a combination of over 3,000 independent dealers and distributors in more than 150 countries. So most likely, Trish and Kevin have come across these farm equipment. Ben is a 2004 graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Platteville, where he earned a degree in ag business with an emphasis on engineering technology. After graduation, he joined AGCO and is currently has global product management responsibilities for field data transfer and machine-to-machine communication. He is also very involved in industry organizations focused on agriculture data, including Ag Gateway and Ag Data Collection and the Agriculture Industry Electronics Foundation, among others. So I'm going to hand this off to you now, Ben.
Thanks. So yeah, I'm just going to do a high-level overview of all the different kind of technologies farms use in the field. But first, I wanted to kind of start off with something out of a November 2014 Harvard Business Review article by Michael Porter and James Heppelman, where they kind of talked about the progression of technology in the ag industry going from kind of the machines all the way to the system of systems. So if you do the next click, get a little circle pops up. This is roughly where I think we are today. We're starting to get smart connected products. So as equipment manufacturers, we've been building a lot more intelligence into our machines in the past several years. And now we're to the point where we're starting to build in cell modems and most of the machines, at least for larger production agriculture, are coming out of the factory with some sort of cellular modem or Wi-Fi device built into them from the factory, trying to get those connected so we can start moving out a little bit farther to the right there to get to the system of systems. So if you go to the next slide, we'll kind of go through what some of these technologies are and the different applications that they're all used in. So the first little bubble that popped up there is over the farm office. And I think Kevin went through a lot of the different things that farmers use this for, just for managing their business, on being able to run websites, reach out to consumers and things like that. They also are going to use a lot of connectivity there to manage their operations. So I think it was mentioned being able to go out and shop for different inputs. So if they're looking for new seed, chemical, equipment, things like that, they're going to be doing a lot of research online, looking at different forums, things like that, where you really need an internet connection to be able to do that. They're also going to be doing those transactions with those different service providers, transferring data back and forth to get recommendations. All that's going online now. And then just their overall farm management system. Most of those are starting to move to the cloud and not be PC-based programs anymore. So just being able to manage all their operational data, the business system they use to run the farms, things like that. Definitely all need some sort of connectivity to make that happen. Go to the next one. We'll look at the sprayer over there in the field running around. Wireless transfer is getting to be pretty important for these types of machines. So all the precision technologies that people think about on reducing the amount of seed and chemical used in the field based on putting just the right amount in the right spot, you have to get a map, a prescription map, out to that machine so it knows where it needs to put what stuff. Historically, that's been done with, you know, things like SD data cards or USB sticks, which are kind of prone to getting lost in the truck or forgetting to, you know, get plugged into the terminal. So that's where we really start to see this movement towards growers wanting these machines connected, and they can wirelessly send those work orders to those machines so they don't have to worry about physically transferring that prescription map out to the machine. The next one is kind of on the other end of that. So as you're out in the field with your combine harvesting, you also want to get a record of what yield came out of which spot in the field. So if you're going to do management of multiple different zones at a subfield level, you need to have the historic yield information to know which parts of your field yielded better than others. You can do infield trials to see how different fertility programs work within that field. So that as-applied information gets to be pretty important. Again, putting it on a USB stick and hoping that makes it back to the farm office can sometimes be a little bit risky. There's also a lot of times where there's pretty time-sensitive information needed. If a farmer is going to do a fall fertilizer application, for example, they want to get that data off the combine right away, because as soon as that machine's out of the field, the next one's coming in to put the fertilizer out. And to be able to generate that variable rate prescription, they're going to need that yield file. So driving a couple hours back to town with the USB stick so somebody can analyze that and generate that prescription is not real feasible. But if you can wirelessly transfer that data, you can get a lot more of this stuff done on a lot more timely basis. Going to the next one, we have, you can kind of see little irrigation pivot tracks in the field there. So a lot of the same stuff happens with the irrigation system. So as we try to get more efficient in the use of water, you can essentially, you know, begin creating prescription maps for watering different areas of the field at different rates. We're also seeing more chemigation, where some of the fertilizer or pesticides can be included with the irrigation water. That needs a work order going out to those, so the machine, the pivot, or whatever irrigation method they're using knows where to apply different amounts of water. And the same thing, you want to have a record then of where that water was applied, how it was used, and things like that. So very similar to the equipment, just those are kind of stationary in the field, don't really drive around much. Additionally to that, there's a big monitoring aspect of that. So these irrigation pivots are often out, not very close to civilization. So having to have somebody drive out to all those, start them up, make sure they're running all right, nothing's broke down, gets to be very time-consuming and expensive for farmers when they're, you know, constantly forced looking at labor shortages. The ability to hook a telematics system up to one of those to be able to remotely turn it on, monitor how it's performing, identify any issues without having to send somebody out there is a really big benefit. The next thing that's called out there is a GNSS correction signal. So going forward, most of the farm equipment now can actually steer itself in, you know, straight rows down the field. To be able to do that, you need to have a correction signal to augment the normal GPS position you get through things like your phone or, you know, your TomTom. With this correction signal, the machines can drive actually to be within 1 inch of where they're supposed to be. But you need a way to get that signal out to those machines. That's transitioning rapidly to come via a cloud-based platform. So you need a cellular connection for that machine to be able to connect to the internet and get that correction signal to be able to operate at those high levels of guidance accuracy. Next one. So just remote monitoring in general, a lot of the logistics and coordination. As you can see, there's a lot of different machines out in the field running around. So from the farm office, the farmer wants to be able to see where they are, which machines are running low on product in the tank, which combines are getting full and need to be unloaded, which machines are low on fuel. From the AGCO perspective, you know, wanting to support equipment through our dealers, we want to know how many hours are on a machine. Is it due for routine maintenance? Are there any things that are out of the normal on the operation of that machine where, you know, a potential failure could occur? The nature of farming is very time sensitive. So being able to instantly get notified that a machine has an issue, to be able to get out there and know exactly where it is when you're dispatching service trucks, that's a huge benefit to be able to keep focused on uptime and reliability on these machines, as well as things like terminal mirroring, so you could remotely see what an operator is looking at. If they're having an issue, it might be just a training or coaching activity to make sure they know how to run the terminal in the cab. And same thing for software updates. I think everybody's pretty familiar with that today. Right now, you got to drive out to all these machines and flash new software on them. Eventually, if we get enough internet access to them, we could be able to push those updates over there and wirelessly keep those machines up to date to help reduce downtime and maintenance. The next one is over at the grain bin there. Similar story to the irrigation system. So a lot of grain dryers and grain bins can be connected to the internet now. So again, you can remotely monitor those during the heat of harvest, when a lot of grain's coming in, the dryer, you know, it's not uncommon for those to run 24 hours a day for, you know, a month or two straight as different grain comes in. And a lot of times those aren't located real close to the house either. So a farmer has to get up every few hours and go check on those all through the night. If it's connected to the internet, he can do that from, the comfort of the app while he's sitting on his lazy boy at home. Makes it a little bit easier to monitor all that, not as much time spent driving back and forth to check on things that are going on. Same thing with the truck there, you know, you see in the commercial trucking industry, a lot of focus on the logistics, on monitoring where trucks are. Same thing on the farm operation. They want to know where those trucks are, if they're waiting in line, if they need to do anything different in the field because the truck isn't going to be back in time to unload a combine. The next one is the livestock building. So as was mentioned with dairy farms, they have cameras and things to remotely monitor those. Most of the cows now have RFID tags in their collars, so you can monitor how much feed and water each cow's getting, how much milk they're producing. At AGCO, through the GSI brand, we do swine and poultry buildings. So we can do the same thing to monitor feed consumption, water consumption, the temperature, humidity, basically the HVAC systems within those barns. So we want to be able to monitor that remotely because, again, those aren't always located real closely to civilization. So you got to have a pretty good drive to go out and check on those buildings sometimes. And those systems are often used to monitor for health and other things. You can tell if water consumption goes down, there might be an illness going through the herd or flock. So you want to be able to access that information pretty quickly, be able to get to it remotely. So those monitoring systems are pretty key to be able to access through the internet. Next one is, like I mentioned, with the equipment side of this, the dealers and other service providers. There's a whole service market that can pop up that's just kind of getting started now based on having access to the telemetry data coming from these different machines. So you can monitor them, optimize performance, identify any outliers. You know, that can lead to things like operator training or identifying failure issues earlier. So there's a whole host of services and additional things that can come along simply by having machines connected to the internet. Next was mentioned, I think, a little bit with the California study is a lot of the in-field IoT sensors. So being able to monitor things like weather stations, in-field soil probes, measuring the soil temperature and moisture. You also have people putting cameras out there to monitor vegetation growth, watch for wildlife. All sorts of different uses are coming up. But again, that data isn't much good if it's stuck on a USB drive that's in the field and somebody's got to drive out and retrieve it all the time. But if we can get all those different sensors and things connected to the cloud, we can make a lot more real-time, timely decisions, especially when you're looking at things that are going to impact the health and yield coming off that crop. That leads in the next one, number 11, for mobile apps and other field scouting tools. The farmer isn't always sitting in his office. He's a lot of times out driving around, checking on all these different operations. They have different service providers doing different scouting operations. So, again, going back to the labor shortage, a guy can go out to a field, identify there's a bug. He might not know what bug it is, but if he has internet access, he can take a picture of it with his phone and then send that back to somebody that knows how to identify the bug, the disease, or other issue that's going on in the field. So that can be promptly treated to help protect that yield. So just having that coverage as they're out driving around is very important. Again, this is not happening near population centers. And finally, the last one is just the supply chain interactions. Farmers utilize a big network of different advisors, you know, retailers, and other people that do a lot of things. And most of the time, the farmer has to share data about their operation with those providers to get a recommendation. So if he wants to follow up with his seed salesman on which particular variety to plant and at what rate, he's got to be able to get that guy soil samples, historical yield information, fertility information, a lot of different data that's geo-referenced in these files that needs to be transferred around. Again, if you're trying to do that over a dial-up connection, it can be pretty challenging. And also with the, you know, recent interest in drones, we've seen kind of a resurgence of aerial imagery coming back to look at plant health and growth and monitoring all that. When you start moving around, you know, 2 or 3 centimeter resolution image files over a 200-acre field, those are some pretty big files that you cannot move on a low-speed connection. So if you're going to be looking at that, doing analysis and things like that, these service providers need to have access to a pretty good internet connection to be able to use those cloud tools to be able to pull all this data the farmer has together, run some analysis on it, make a recommendation, generate those prescription maps, and transfer it back out to those machines. So next slide is just kind of a summary of everything I covered here. on all the different tools that either in the farm office or from the machinery level require some sort of connectivity to be able to make this all happen in a lot more efficient way for the farmer. So that's all I have.
Thank you, Ben. Your presentation really shows why broadband access is so important to farmers and in the agriculture industry. I think that we, at least at Broadband USA, I've learned a lot knowing now all the different things that need broadband on a farm. We have some time for questions and comments. If you would like to ask a question, please type it in. We've already gotten a couple, so I'm going to direct those to who I think is the appropriate person. One of them is to Kevin about the Broadband Accessibility Act. You mentioned that Farm Bureau was supportive of it. What role did you play in helping to craft or pass the Broadband Accessibility Act in Tennessee?
Yeah, we were really supportive of the bill. We lobbied for it. We encouraged our members to, encourage their lawmakers to vote for it. Before that, there had been other pieces of legislation that weren't as successful, that didn't come from the governor's office, that we had been involved in, that we were supportive of. So everybody kind of knew that as an organization, we were supportive of getting broadband into rural areas. But also, I mentioned the study that took place about broadband connectivity in rural areas and all across the across Tennessee. We really encouraged our members to participate in that, and at all of our meetings leading up to that study, we helped promote that study to get that going on, so that way there could be a really true representation of the rural needs of internet out there.
Okay, and when was the act passed? When did it
pass? Sorry, I should have mentioned that the bill passed this spring. So our legislative session typically runs from January through late April. I can't remember the exact date, but it was signed into law this spring, and so they are working on the implementation of how they're going to do the grants and that kind of thing. So, like I said, go ahead.
Were the grants specifically targeted to rural areas in
Yes. Okay. So in order to be eligible for the grant, you have to be going into the provider has to be going into an underserved area. So I think by the definition of the bill, an underserved area is a place that doesn't have access to at least 10-1 capability. But preference would be given to areas that don't have any internet connectivity. And then the minimum standard those providers had to provide is 10-1. And again, preference given to those that go up to the higher speeds. I think the big thing is that we want access to in those rural areas, and they're going to kind of score those in our economic and community development department at the state level is going to be the ones handing those grants out. They haven't done that yet, but providers can apply for those.
Okay, there's a lot of questions on your legislation, so I'm gonna kind of cut that off, but then just to know that people are very interested in that legislation in Tennessee, because I think some states are hoping that their state will be next.
Yeah.
I have a question for Ben. How do most farm operations manage the data transfer given gaps in coverage? You mentioned the USB going out and getting it, and then kind of what kind of speeds are required for the monitoring system?
Yeah, so it kind of varies widely on the different systems out there. So for like the prescription files right now, a lot of guys are still using the USB sticks. But most of the systems are designed to actually cache the data. So if they're more of a telematic system that does more of a live tracking, they'll cache the information on board the machine for a certain period of time. Obviously, there's storage limitations there on what the machine will actually hold. But then once it gets back into an area with coverage, it'll upload all that. As far as how much bandwidth is needed, you know, a lot of those prescription files, it's heavily determined by how big of a field you're going into. So, you know, they can be 100 megabytes, they can be 50, they could be, you know, even larger than that for some of the more involved operations. Same thing, the yield files are about the same size coming back off. And those yield files aren't updated continuously. It's logged on the machine until you hit your done button on the terminal that you're finished with the field, and then it'd want to try to start uploading that, you know, 100 megabyte file. But then the monitoring systems, they'll monitor anywhere from probably 5 to 25 different parameters on board the machine. And then depends on the system. Some of them update all 25 parameters every second. So that takes a pretty, you know, continuous, pretty good connection. And then other ones, they update on a less frequent rate. So like I said, it really kind of depends on which manufacturer you're looking at.
Okay. And then someone asked a question, will the new technology provided through the small cell satellites in the low Earth orbit to cell phones leapfrog the prior current generation of fiber installation technological capabilities? And I think that probably is for you, Ben. Do you think that the...
I think there's potential there. We've only looked at a couple of those. A lot of those satellite networks are... at least the ones I've seen have been looking more at like a Zigbee or LoRa kind of IoT bandwidth for the satellite communications. There's only one or two I've seen where they're looking at more of a broadband coverage. So it kind of remains to be seen how those are all going to play out. But if they can get the, you know, those higher connection speeds through those smaller box satellites, I think there is a potential there to, you know, be able to provide coverage everywhere. Cost gets to be a big piece of that right now. There are a couple satellite providers out there right now for data, but it's pretty expensive and a pretty limited bandwidth. So we're really only looking at that for more of a, you know, emergency, something's gone wrong kind of notification, and not the more general, I want to know where my tractor is right now kind of information.
Okay.
Catherine, this is Trish. Just to add on to that, one thing we've been working with USDA and UC to look at some emerging technologies and looking at different levels of scale about where to apply some smaller technologies that kind of help build into a connected system. So that's one thing. And we're also trying to kind of monetize the cost or the opportunity, the economic opportunity, by showing if you provide these other kind of services, thinking of sensors, for instance, as economic units, you make a different case for investment too.
Okay. Trish, I have a question for you because I think you might, through your literature review and the work you've done, what would be the best way to find information about rural areas that lack a broadband connection? Are there any studies that would be useful, including yours?
We have data. We have maps in California. I think the FCC has maps, too. We can provide some links if that will be helpful.
Okay, we'll put some of the information up, and we'll put the contact information on for each of the speakers with their email, because we have a lot of questions, and so we're not going to be able to get to all of them today. So we're going to go ahead and put that up and send it out to the registrants, so you can directly talk to the speakers if they're willing to do that.
Yes, we'd be very happy to do that. And I just want to note that that's why we do a lot of the speed testing, the on-field or the on-site speed testing using the CalSpeed app, because that's a way to get better data, too, from the reported data. So that verification process has been important for us.
And there's also the National Broadband Map, although it's, that the FCC has right now. So one last question, and then we're going to have to cut it off. And like I said, we'll send out the emails to the for the speaker, so you can directly email them the questions. Is mobile wireless the broadband technology that farmers find the most helpful, or is it fixed wireless preferred due to the fact it doesn't have data caps like mobile tends to have? So I don't know.
This is Kevin. I'll take a stab at that. Mobile is great and handy, but when we talk to our farmers, mobile is used, but just like broadband is a actual line is spotty in rural areas, a wireless service is just as spotty and sometimes doesn't work in rural areas. So it is an important tool in the toolbox for farmers. But that wireline service with the data caps, with the and really overall speed is not there yet either. So having the capability of the wireline makes a big difference. We haven't seen the technology yet, other than a wireline service that really provides that type of speed, capacity, and the things that are needed that we need in the future.
That's
okay.
That's same here for us.
Okay. Thanks, guys. I'm having to hurry up a little bit. But I did want to put in someone who did mention, because it wasn't mentioned, but I know that all of you support the continuing education of farmers, and having access to take online training is also important, particularly through the extension services that operate in each state. So someone did point that out, so I wanted to give a big shout-out for the extension services in the states, because we at NTIA and Broadband USA work closely with them. So thank you to everybody for joining us. A copy of the slides will be on our website within 7 days. Except for August, the webinars are scheduled the third Wednesday of each month. Please join us on the 20th for digital training and workforce development, of which Extension plays a role in also. You can consult the Broadband USA website to learn about our technical assistance programs, which also we've been working a lot with rural areas and farmers increasingly. So if you want more information on that, please consult our website. Our guides and publication and additional tools are available that can assist you with the planning and implementation of your broadband deployment expansion or inclusion project. I'd like to thank our presenters today and wish everybody the great rest of the day. Thank you for joining us.